Rorick Honda witnessed record-breaking sales in May, and now that most counties are green, there is no reason for June to not follow suit.
Plus, Hondas at Rorick range from small and compact to roomy and equipped, plus everything in between, and in all colors, makes, and models. Contact one of our reputable sales consultants, and as always, visit Rorick.com for all of your vehicle needs.
And now what are we doing?
Oh, a podcast from my living room.
Right.
According to the Oxford Dictionary, the word jagoff is defined as a noun, which means a stupid, irritating, or...
Here's how Pittsburghers define a word jagoff. When someone cuts you off on a parkway.
Jagoff!
Or someone scares the out of you.
Yeah, jagoff!
Or it's a term of endearment.
How you been, jagoff?
This is Mark Madden.
Hi, this is Larry Richard.
This is Ken Wild Bill.
Hey, this is Kurt Angle.
Hi, this is Rocky Blair.
Hey, it's Rick Seaback.
Hi, this is Greg Brown.
Hi, I'm Tyler Kennedy.
This is Santonio Holmes.
And this is the You Jagoff Podcast.
So this is the You Jagoff Podcast, and
like the Ohio State.
Yeah, but not quite.
Yeah.
Yes, better.
Yes. Yeah.
We have been enjoying this pandemic in a way because, you know, we like to take the podcast out on the road and be in front of people. But like today and the previous podcast, it has given us the opportunity to have some really super guests who we don't have the money to fly into Pittsburgh.
There you go. Or, you know, for their time, right? They're able to commit a little bit easier and it makes life better because we get to really hear and listen what they're saying.
And if you're listening to the Jagoff podcast for the first time, please go to the radio.com app and subscribe. Or you can go to whatever other place where you get your podcast and subscribe. If you go to iTunes, please make sure you give us a nice comment. If you want to be on the podcast or have an interesting job, some cool thing, let us know. Email us at Rachel, R-A-C-H-A-E-L, at yajagoff.com, or John, J-O-H-N, at yajagoff.com. We'd love to have you on as a guest, especially as we're working through. By the way, we are going to do our Porch podcast this year. So
yes, we can't wait. Can't wait. Thanks to J&D Waterproofing. So on the blog this week, pretty interesting. You did something about upstreamer part salmon. What?
Right.
And you hate salmon.
I do.
Right.
It was at a Wendy's and the person was parked in between, in completely opposite of the arrows.
Yeah. Right. And then I got to talk a little bit about learning more than doo-wop, obviously with the sensitivity of all of the craziness that's happening right now. We wanted to give our reflection on the racial issue that's happening. And we basically gave an example of how fortunate I was to grow up among all these doo-wop stars.
And then we had this from the North Carolina area. We had the 90-degree mattress, someone who does not know how to tie a mattress to their truck.
Yeah.
And you can actually go, you could see the link. There's a video of the person driving. And
I did
the
see
mattress.
That. Yeah. That's crazy. And then Slow Down Your Jagoff. I mean, we got a bunch of shares on that. And it's right here on the street that you turn out from my street. And it's actually the sign that's hanging on my brother's telephone pole because he gets so angry. And he's that guy that comes out and yells, Slow Down Your Jagoff. So it's a sign that says that. So that's what was on the blog. Listen, we've gotten into this habit and I love it. Friday's question of the day. We love looking at the answers from the crazy questions of the day. And sometimes they're as silly as what's your favorite Pop-Tart flavor. But we asked what the question of the day for the podcast would be. And it was being out of town, but having ties to Pittsburgh, because this is the Out of Towner podcast. What's the one person, place, or thing that perfectly identifies Pittsburgh? I love some of these answers. You got a bunch of comments on this.
Yeah, it was pretty good. At some point, we're going to let you dial into the phone number to leave these as a voicemail that we could play the back. But I was surprised at this. Is that we all know that coming through Fort Pitt Tunnel is awesome, but Valerie Palmer said driving down 28 is cool.
I mean, really? Wait, 28?
Yeah, it was
we were talking yesterday when we were driving on 51 that McKnight is definitely better. So I think that 28 falls somewhere in that category.
No doubt about
right?
It.
Like they're not good. They're not quite 51, but they're not good. And then let's see, it's Lisa McAfee says the one and only Permane's, Chip Tam, Three Rivers Stadium. And of course, the Steelers. So that's pretty cool because those definitely identify us.
And Colleen Grace Lease said Isley's. You know, and Isley's is a really interesting thing because we send Isley's chipped ham to my cousins in Florida
Florida good point.
Because they cannot get anything like it there.
Neil Devine says anybody who speaks Yinzer or a real hoagie, that means that they are not easy to, he says they're not easy to find. Any Stillers stickers? Excuse me. And hearing Donnie Iris on the radio.
So that question is what all of the guests today on the podcast are answering, because this is our out-of-towner podcast.
Yeah. We don't say out-of-town very well, luckily, because we are somewhat yinzers. But yeah, we're super excited to welcome Elena, who was from Butler County and now lives in Nashville. So our friend Kirstie gave us some insight on her, and we can't wait to talk to her.
She has a brand new song coming out called Play Dumb, and you're going to hear it.
Don't
as
play
we
dumb.
Through.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
And Jason Falls. We know fanboy. Rachel knows that
fanboy
I
alert.
Right. I fanboy over Jason Falls.
And DJ Bonix is headlining us. I can't wait, because I've only really gotten to talk to him at the David Allen fashion shows in passing and saying, hey, what do you think about this kind of thing? So I can't wait to really talk to him about what it's like to really, you know, formulate and have the science behind mixing.
Shopping at the all-night mini mart, dropping little Debbie's in my cart, when the sheriff showed up with a pair of handcuffs and took me away, brought me into question about
so
how my ex went
missing. This person, we've had him in our bullpen of guests for I don't know how long.
Ever?
Like, we talk, yeah, we say this all the time, months, right? And the funny part is, we were talking about the dorky marketers in us want to talk to him more about marketing and find out how we can pick his brain to be better at our real jobs. But the reality is, he's the reason the Ajaga podcast exists. Like, I couldn't wait to say that, because that's the story you tell, right?
That is the
so
story.
So the one and only Jason Falls is with us finally, and John is so excited. It's like a kid in a candy store.
I'm honored that you guys think that, but I am taking none of the blame.
Listen, he gives it to you whether you like it or not, you know.
You know, and for those who don't know, so, you know, years ago, and it'll be 10 years this coming December that you'd start the Jagoff blog because I was mad at a bus. And then and then at one point I met this guy Jason Falls, and he came to Pittsburgh to talk about content marketing and things like that, and I just got it. I loved his message, and I said, "Hey, I'm not sure if this blog thing is a real thing or is it a hobby?
Or where do you go with it?
Yeah, what do I do with it?" Yeah. And he did like a little dive on it, did me a favor and all that kind of stuff. And the one thing he came back with recommendation was, you know, you probably need to start a podcast. And I'm like, Jesus, I don't want to do one more thing for free. You know? And it now is, you know, let's get right to the bottom line is, look where we are. Rachel is my partner, and it has gone above and beyond. Now, people used to find the podcast because of the blog post. People find the blog post because of the podcast now.
Right.
So you, we have to
look
thank
at us,
that.
Jason.
High
five,
it?
Bro.
Yeah.
There we go. I love it.
Yeah. Cool. I mean, you know, it was nice that he didn't really introduce us this morning because he was fanboying and excited that you were helping us do this. So it was like, oh, by the way, that's Rachel.
Oh, yeah, that's Rachel. I was like, well, yeah, I know who Rachel is. But we hadn't actually come into contact with me.
Jason, you are a marketing professional. You've done radio. You've done podcasts. You've done speaking all over I think internationally as well. I mean, all over the country, but certainly internationally. And you've written books on content marketing. And the best thing I like, the reason why I attached you is because you are real. Mm-hmm. And you just say, here's what this is. And we're very similar. Rachel and I are very similar brains in that. It's like this Switcher studio thing. When you started putting that out there, I'm like, oh my God, like we need that to go to the next level. So content marketing author, and you have a book coming out, which we'll tease at the end of this. But in the meantime, welcome to the Jagoff podcast, and we have to let you talk at some point.
Well, thanks.
I love
Pittsburgh, and the whole kind of shoot them straight attitude, tell it like it is. I think that partially comes from me spending my summers in Pittsburgh. My dad lived in Munhall when I was growing up, and so I'm from Eastern Kentucky, and people in Eastern Kentucky, when they thought about going to the big city, they were usually talking about Lexington, Kentucky, which isn't that big. Maybe they were going to Louisville or Cincinnati, but I went to Pittsburgh in the summer times, and that was something completely different. And it set me apart from my friends, the stories that I got to tell and the people that I got to meet, places I got to go. And Pittsburgh was very much like Eastern Kentucky, you know, hardworking blue collar people who Great. Work hard, who don't take crap from anybody. And who don't BS you, you know? And so I think there's a lot of similarities there. And so I think I identify with the people of Pittsburgh a lot, even though I really only spend a couple of weeks there every summer and maybe a holiday here or there, but I've always had, you know, a great love for the city and enjoy being a fan of all the sports teams. I've got my Pirates gear on.
I was going to say, I told you, we don't even wear it, so we're impressed.
If you look close enough on my shelves here, I've got Pirates memorabilia stuck up there. This right here, this massive thing over my shoulder, that is the Lanny for Terry signed scorecards for my first ever Pirates game when I was 9 years old.
Oh, wow.
On one side of it. On the other side of it is the Greg Brown signed copy of his scorecard from my son's first game. So, like,
that's awesome.
I'm a Pittsburgh guy.
You really are. And John loves Greg Brown. Did you do your homework or is that just coincidental?
Everybody loves Greg Brown. He's a great guy. So I worked in college athletics PR for a while. So I've got contacts, you know, at some of the Major League Baseball teams and whatnot. And so when I had these, I tracked these Lanny for Terry scorecards down. His son was selling his old scorecards signed by him and the manager. So Chuck Tanner's signature on there too. And this was 1982 was my first doubleheader against the Expos. I got to see Stargell play in his last year. So I've always had this like iconic memory in my brain of that night. So I figured out which game it was. And then I randomly saw one day online that Lanny Fritteri's son was selling his old scorecards. If they were available, you could buy them. So I called him up and I was like, this is the date. And he's like, yeah, I still got them. I was like, name your price. I don't care. So I get these scorecards and I have this plan to frame them, but I waited until my dad came to visit me the next time. And they're in these little, you know, protective cases. And I just walked up behind him on the couch and I hung it over his head so that he could look at it. And he sat there for a second and went, get the hell out. Like he knew exactly what it was.
Wow.
And then a few years later, when my son got old enough to go to his first Pirates game, it was Father's Day weekend against the Indians. And my dad met us up there, so all three of us went. It was great. And then I emailed through the Pirates PR team, got hold of Greg Brown and said, hey, here's my Lanny for Terry scorecard story. I would love somehow, some way to get your scorecard from my son's first game signed so that I could hang it on the wall. And he said, well, I keep all my scorecards in a binder now, and I don't tear them out. I keep them for my own, you know, personal stuff, but I'll give you a photocopy of it. So I was like, that's great. So the first game was on a Friday. I had emailed him back and forth. On Father's Day, on Sunday, I take my dad and my son. I said, hey, we're going over to the ballpark a little early. I got a surprise for you. We walk in the media entrance, and there's Greg Brown with the signed scorecard, a couple of media guys. Hey, talks to my dad, talks to my son for like 10 minutes. Blew their minds. It was fantastic. Wow.
Yeah, he's a class act for sure. So obviously you're a sports guy, but – you know, we know you more from the marketing aspect. And what really struck my fancy, you know, and as we're talking about the fact that marketing, like any other, you know, part of life, is moving to the next stage, and it's keeping up with, and you're only as good as your last hit, and it's keeping up with, you know, how do I get better and grow, and what resources do I use? And you certainly, you've hit the mark. You know what's next. You're a little bit ahead of, you know, where we are and what we're doing. How do you have the foresight to know this kind of stuff? Are you a techie guy that you're just following this, or do you really have that insight to say, we got to get to the next level?
You know, it's a combination of two or three things. First of all, I love to tinker with new technology. So anytime a new software package comes down, like for instance, Switcher Studio, which is what we're using right now on the podcast for those, or for the video part of the podcast, for those of you watching, it allows you to do stuff like this. And so I basically just took myself widescreen solo. So now John and Rachel are in the background, but then I can hit a couple buttons and it does this. And now we're all back on the screen together. So it's, and this is all done on an iPad. So this is, I'm literally hitting a button with my finger or the screen with my finger to do that. And so if I want to make myself solo, I just do this, and there I go. And now I'm solo. And then I hit a couple other buttons and now we're back to that. So I'm tinkering around with toys like this all the time just to see, okay. And I do that primarily so that I can figure out how to use these technologies to keep my clients out in front, right? Because I work at an ad agency, Cornette, in Lexington, Kentucky, and we work with a bunch of different clients, and they're always trying to have a little bit of an edge, something that sets them aside from their competition. So I like to tinker with the toys, and so that gives me a little bit of a head start on the technology. But I also have this sort of, I guess, this natural curiosity about, you know, consumer behavior, psychology, mm-hmm. why do people make the decisions they make? So it's not just the technology. It's also understanding consumers and what they're doing and why they're doing it. Mm-hmm. So I saw this, you know, the reason that people shifted from, let's say, MySpace to Facebook. I saw that not before everybody else saw it, but probably on the bleeding edge of when it happened. So I was at the starting line, not way back in the back of the pack. And in that position from a marketing, you know, consultant or agency guy standpoint, your clients really appreciate you being out in front. A lot of times clients are too, they're like, well, I'm not sure if you're right. They're too afraid. They're not, they don't want the risk averse, right?
Yeah. Right.
So they don't necessarily want to dive in right away. But if I'm not doing my job and I'm doing a disservice to them, if I'm not saying, here's an opportunity for you. And so I just try to keep abreast of the opportunities and understand where consumers are going.
Even your most recent podcast, you have the podcast. It used to be called the Jason Falls Podcast. It now has a new name, which we'll talk about in a second. But even the podcast you had where you talked about social, listening to what's going on in the environment and adapting your marketing. And that's where we are right now, right? Because people have to pivot their marketing.
The pandemic,
now coupled on with the human rights and political situation that's going on, people are literally pivoting every day in what they're supposed to be saying, not saying, and how they're presenting their product or service. What do you recommend for people to stay ahead? I mean, in Pittsburgh, we have restaurants just getting ready to open yesterday, right? And then the salons are opening this weekend. In the meantime, they just can't come say, hey, it's 20% off perms this weekend, right? They have to do something else.
John, people don't get perms anymore. I'm sorry. I had to.
Do they not?
Not really.
Good, because they smell.
I'm sorry. I try not to correct, but that one I couldn't.
Okay.
That's all right. We'll let him get back to his Vitalis and his, you know, Buffon, whatever he's got going on up there. So we're in this kind of weird place where businesses are in this gray area where they have to do something or they're going to be forgotten and fade away.
Right.
But if they do too much, they're going to create a hornet's nest of problems.
Yep.
And so especially on, you know, the Black Lives Matter, the social issue of the day with, you know, all the racial tensions that are going on, you know, we've had this conversation this last week with several clients of what do you say? You can't be silent. We've reached a point where we can't be silent about it, even as businesses. So what do you say and how far is too far? And obviously anything revolving around doing anything other than showing your solidarity, if you're trying to sell anything, you're dead. You're toast.
Right.
There's just no way that people are going to respond to that in a positive manner. So you have to be able to show compassion and empathy and solidarity with the movement. You have to make a statement of, you know, we're not going to tolerate racism, but you can't do it in, you know, a flashy look at me kind of way. You just kind of have to be there with everyone else.
There's a genuine sense, right?
Absolutely. And I think what I've tried to tell the clients that I've talked to directly, because we have, you know, a team of people. And so there's certain clients will go through an account person and whatnot. And I've talked to a couple directly and I've said, look, the best thing you can do right now is just be present. Be present and accounted for. If everybody is changing their profile pictures to a black square or a black circle, do it too. Don't say anything about it. Don't look for a pat on the back. Don't try to be, you know, glorify your business because, hey, we're righteous. We're going to be here with you. That's going to come across as the wrong tone. You just want to be there with your customers and your family of people. And so the biggest thing to understand is not necessarily about the technology, and it's not really understanding crisis communications or anything like that either. It's understanding your customers. It's understanding your community. And so talk to them and just go to them and say, hey, we're here with you, you know, physically, mentally, emotionally, and everything else, but we don't really know what to say to make sure that we're saying the right thing. They'll tell you. Your customers will let you know.
And I don't want to change gears too quickly or jump all over as far as marketing, but as we know, it does at this point encompass so many different things, right? So I was looking at some of the things that you have on your website, and you actually mentioned that Meltwater uses podcasts now to measure their, I guess, validity. I don't know if that's the word I want to use, but for someone who doesn't know, Meltwater and Cision are these services that are used to kind of say, hey, this is where you should be marketing or you should be using your PR efforts in this particular market. And sometimes it's a newspaper publication, sometimes it's a TV broadcast, radio. But now it's podcasts. How have podcasts, and you having one as well, How has that really impacted and influenced this industry, especially from a marketing standpoint?
Well, it all starts with the consumer behavior. Okay. So podcasts first appeared on the scene in the early 2000s, and there was this like little geek club of people who did podcasts, and they got somewhat popular for a little while, and then they kind of faded away.
Sure.
I think there was a barrier to entry from a technology understanding standpoint. But as the technology got easier and better, and services came out that made it really simple to kind of get a podcast on the air. And of course, live streaming now, anybody can just kind of hit a button on their phone and live stream. So now you've got a podcast, whether you call it that or not. More and more consumers started going to podcasts. Now, the whole COVID-19 thing has blown that way open, because now people are like, well, what am I going to do all day if I'm not working or whatever? They're going to podcasts. So it's become a much, much bigger industry over the last, certainly over the last year. But even beyond that, the last probably 6 or 7 years, podcasts have become huge. I mean, you know, Joe Rogan's podcast just sold for $100 million. Right?
Yeah.
That's a lot of money. Now, he's got a big audience, but at the same time, it's a big deal, and it's pretty easy for people to do it. So a lot of people are flocking to it. Cision and Meltwater and a couple of others have figured out that, look, this is a multimedia file that we can't necessarily index like a search engine unless we translate it and make it a transcription, and then we can index the words that are said. So what they're doing now with these podcasts and these services that public relations people and brand managers and whatnot, social media people can subscribe to, is they're saying, okay, I want to monitor all of the podcasts out there or all of the traditional media and see where my brand's being mentioned or where some topic is being mentioned, so I know where to pitch my stories or where to try to partner, you know, with those kinds of things. And what these services are doing is they're basically going to public podcast places where they can download, you know, the Jagoff podcast. They're pulling it into their system. They're transcribing the text of it and putting it in their index, so that if I say Buffalo Trace Bourbon on your podcast, at some point in the next 24 hours, some flag is going to go up in Cision and Meltwater that says, hey, Buffalo Trace, the Jagoff podcast talked about you.
Yeah, I didn't realize that's how that was. Yeah, because we use it, you know, for clients, but we actually are a part of it now and have gotten so many more press releases in the last year, to your point, than we ever did.
And so someone like me, because I work with a lot of spirits brands, Buffalo Trace Bourbon being one of them. So, you know, full disclosure, they're a client and I mentioned them, so sue me. So what we use it for is we will look for people on podcasts talking about cocktails or bourbon or whiskey and say, hey, they're talking about the topic already. We can lend expertise to that conversation. So we can either pitch someone from the brand as a guest on the show, or we can advertise on the show. Or we can partner with whoever runs that podcast for other sort of influencer stuff on Instagram and stuff where they have built audiences. So it gives us fertile ground to try to build partnerships with to reach those audiences in a much more meaningful way. So that's kind of how we use them.
So interesting.
And I love, and let's, if I can transition from that, again, you had me at your, I don't know if it was your first book, but No Bullshit Social Media.
It's right here. Look at that.
I love it.
That's a handsome book right there.
Yeah. And, but now you have me in that, again, you're a very real, realistic person in that you're talking about influencers. And really, you know, we've always said, and I think I've even emailed this to you, is like, we tell our clients, we don't care if the influencer has 100 or 50,000 followers. It's the percentage of people that they, if I have an influencer with 100 followers and 75% of their people will take some action for us, then we're good, right? But if they have 100,000 followers and nobody's taking action because they're just talking about themselves, then it's no good.
A lot of influencers out there online, and when most people think of influencers, they think of Instagrammers or YouTubers. But it's anybody who has influence, and it can be online or offline, which is stuff that I get to in this book that I'm writing. But I think influencers have gotten a bad name because there's a lot of them out there who are like, yes, I will hold your bottle of water in my hand for $10,000 on Instagram. Right. And they don't do anything with the product other than show it.
Right.
It's product placement. Yep. There's not a call to action. It's hard to measure. You don't know what value you're getting out of it. There's an entire world, probably 90% of the influencers out there are like, you guys who are like, okay, A, are we a good fit? B, what's your call to action? What are you trying to get people to do? How can we make that happen? How can we measure it to show that we're being effective so that you keep coming back and spending more money with us because we're a good partner for you?
Then it's a win-win. Yeah.
And that's the vast majority of influencers out there. The thing that people see most often are you know, no offense to them, the Kardashians and the Kendall Jenners of the world, who are just like, look, eyeshadow, and they charge $1 million for that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And it's like, well, yeah, I can see your eyeshadow. What does that have to do with anything?
I mean, I get that all the time.
But it's, but my point in the book that I'm writing, is that the word influencer itself biases how we think about it.
Sure.
And my argument is we need to think about it more broadly. We need to call it influence marketing. And that opens up the door to talk about online influence, but also offline influence. And I actually mention you guys in the book, and it's relevant to this topic actually, because I'm saying, look, if my goal here is to change the way voters think about a certain issue in Grand Rapids, Michigan, yajagoff.com doesn't do me any good, because yajagoff.com, while it might reach 50, 100,000, 200,000 people, doesn't reach 200,000 people in Grand Rapids, Michigan. It reaches them in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania.
Right. Mm-hmm.
So there's that point to be made of influencers vary by their audiences, by their content, and by how influential they really are in terms of motivating people to do things.
Right.
The book really frames it in a much more broad perspective so people can understand how to implement it smartly.
You know, the Wahlburgers brand, they have two in Pittsburgh, and, you know, Steelers versus Patriots, New England versus Pittsburgh, you know, that's a tough road to hoe. And, you know, the local franchise owner here said, I like what you guys do. I need you to embed us into the community because people think we're from, he said, no, I will not hire you to help me in Mississippi. Because you're of no help in Mississippi,
right.
But you guys know the Pittsburgh community. You can help us become great. And it's been fun to do that, quite frankly.
Yeah.
And, you know, and even I forget the gentleman's name that was on your podcast again, talking about, you know, making the changes and how you change people's minds. And, you know, we have done that together, because when the Yajagoff blog started, you know, Yajagoff people, 50% of the Pittsburghers will tell you it's a swear word, and 50% say it's not. Right. And but the fact is, we've worked really hard at your Jagoff is something you yell when someone cuts you off on the parkway. Your Jagoff is something you might scream when someone scares the crap out of you. But when I see you at the airport with that Pirates shirt, I'm going to go, Jason, how have you been, you Jagoff? And it's also a term of endearment. And we've been very, very fortunate that people have adopted.
Well, but it also has gone into a branding perspective more so, where it's a Pittsburgh umbrella. To your point, you know, when you think Pittsburgh, we want it to become synonymous, and it is used so often. So, yeah, I mean, we're preaching to the wrong choir. But by the same token, I have to jump back and say, to your point, the way that resources have grown, Cision and Meltwater have made it available for people like us in our industry to say, hey, I can help you in Minneapolis. I might not know your market the way someone who lives there, breathes there, which would make more sense, is homegrown organic. But I have enough sense that I could navigate what makes sense for you to advertise.
Oh, and I'll give you one further. I'm kind of multitasking here and putting you guys.
I love it that you're on our podcast and you're doing all the technical work.
Can you help us out? Yeah.
So I won't be able to show this on the screen, but I have an influencer marketing tool that I use. I'm able to look up individual influencers, and it tells me about their audience. And in most of them, one of the first charts I look at is followers by city worldwide. So I can see, is this person impactful in New York, LA, Chicago, Pittsburgh, wherever?
Right.
And of course, you guys have 77.7% of your audience is Pittsburgh. 1.1% is the next highest, and it's New York. You've also got Los Angeles, Washington, D.C., Johnstown, PA pops up there, and Philadelphia. So those are your top markets, right?
Okay.
But 77% of your audience is from Pittsburgh. I can also tell you that 58% of your audience is male, 42% is female, which makes sense.
Yeah.
Your followers by age, the biggest age group for you guys is 25 to 29. That's 38% of your audience. The next highest is a little bit older than that. 30 to 34 year olds are 28% of your audience. Everything else is probably in the teens. You've got some 20, 24 year olds. So you're like that sort of 20 to 35 is your audience.
Never would have guessed it. Wow.
You've got some in the older and a little bit in the younger, but that 20 to 35 is your audience range. So I see these tools.
Yeah.
So I can go in here. I can look at your content. I can click through to your different websites to see. And like I say, these people make sense for me to partner with because they fit the profile of people I'm trying to reach. Yeah. And again, staying on top of the technology is just, that's part of what I do to kind of keep my clients on top of it.
How does a local salon in Pittsburgh, again, a restaurant, you know, get those kind of tools? I mean, and even if they wanted to do a podcast and use Switcher, are these tools available to the medium to small size businesses?
Absolutely. Okay. So what we're doing right now is we're streaming through Switcher Studio so that I can do the professional things like bring me full screen. And we're using my Switcher Studio, so the fonts and stuff don't match, but I can actually hit a button and now you're going to see my name and my company come up underneath me. So it looks like I'm being produced by a professional television thing. I can actually hit a button and switch over to John and Rachel. So they're the only people on the screen. And then I can hit that button again and put us both. This technology right here is $35 a month for a, you know, lower level subscription. So if you, and the only other technology we're using is Facebook Live, which is free.
Right.
So you go sign up for your Facebook account. You've got your Facebook page. You log into Switcher Studio, which you can, you actually can get a 2-week free trial, by the way. I'll give you a URL for that in a minute. And you pay $35 a month. And then you can come in here and fix all this stuff up so that you've got all these professional graphics and things like that that pop up on the screen. I'm putting the switcherstudio.com/falls little call to action, and you get a 10% off code. We weren't talking about doing this, but I have it built into my
screen. Yeah, do it. Yeah.
Oh, that's fine.
I'm showing you more than selling you, but if you want to go click on this, then I get credit for it. I don't make any money from it, but I get credit for it. So that's where you get this, $35 a month. And you fix it and you say, push my live video to Facebook. And that's what happens. And this is what we're doing. $35. That's it. Crazy. That's all we're talking about. If you want to throw gas on that fire, there, you use another tool, a distribution tool. There's one called StreamYard. There's one called Restream, which is restream.io. And for another $15-$20 a month, I can't remember the exact price, but less than $100 a month, probably less than $60 a month, you're going to be able to use professional production software like Switcher Studio on your live stream, and you can push it to Facebook and also to YouTube and also to LinkedIn and also to another Facebook page and another LinkedIn profile and Twitch if you want to. And so now all of a sudden you have a network. You're broadcasting your show from your little salon all over the internet, all over the world. And that gives you an opportunity to reach more of your customers that are connected to you online with live video, which is prioritized by the algorithms of all these networks. But it also allows you to expand your customer base too.
You know, we always ask ourselves, what do we have to be doing next, right? Because you're right, the podcasting is filling. You know, at some point, we've had to carve out people's time, 45 to 50 minutes of people's time in their life. They had to displace something to take on the Jagoff podcast. We need to make sure that they don't find something else to displace the Jagoff podcast,
yeah.
Right?
Oh,
and how
sure.
do we do yep. that? And how do we keep feeding them? And, you know, go ahead. You were going to say something. Go ahead.
I was just going to say, you're already doing it. You are doing hyper-local content. Your content is about Pittsburgh. Nobody else is really doing that. I mean, yeah, KDKA, your other local media outlets do it, but they do it, you know, for 30 minutes each evening on the news, or, you know, at the top of the hour for 2 or 3 minutes on the news. And then they have different, you know, style. You guys are providing the lifestyle entertainment programming that's hyper-local to Pittsburgh to people who want it. That's why you've been able to establish an audience. You're already doing it. Keeping up with the bells and whistles is going to make it, you know, better. You're going to be able to entertain and keep their attention maybe a little bit longer. But at the same time, it's really the content that people come for. So if you were just doing marketing stuff and weren't focused on Pittsburgh, you might have an audience, mostly Pittsburgh people, but you would lose them eventually because there's lots of other people doing marketing stuff.
Yeah.
Very few people doing hyper local content for Pittsburgh. You're already doing what you need to do.
Thanks, Jason. Go ahead and put your little thing back up now. Put your 10% and put an arrow that says, buy this. All for that, bro.
When people come to marketing, people say, well, should I do a 30-second video? Should I do a 3-minute video? Whatever. And then what time should I post? And blah, 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 blah. You know what? It all is market sensitive. And, you know, we get this fact that, well, people need less than 15 seconds of your recipe going up on Facebook or your podcast. Make your podcast shorter. Joe Rogan his podcast goes on for hours, and look at his numbers.
And people listen. Yeah.
It's completely the opposite. So,
yeah, and it really is, it depends on the type of content you're producing and depends on the type of content that your audience will respond to. And I'll give you a couple of examples. We partnered the Buffalo Trace brand. We partnered with a guy named Derek Wolf, who runs an Instagram account called Over the Fire Cooking. And he built a massive audience, 800 and some thousand followers, by somehow hanging a camera over top of his campfire or outdoor grill or wherever he was cooking. He would hang a camera, and it was an aerial top down time lapsed video about 60 seconds long of how to cook what he was cooking. And then he would, you know, put the recipe in the notes and whatnot. So 60 second videos built a massive audience for it. And so that was really engaging, short, snappy, quick bite content, and it blew up for him. We went in and partnered with him and said, hey, let's change it up a little bit and give you something different to show your audience. And so we partnered with him to create a series called Over the Fire Cooking with Buffalo Trace, where it was like a cooking show, an outdoor cooking show. And we brought in other influencers as guests, and they would talk about whatever the other influencer knew while they were cooking. He would do the recipe thing and whatnot, but it wasn't top down time lapse. It was just, okay, and we edited it all together, made it nice. And then they ate at the end of it, and cheers to a glass of Buffalo Trace. It was great. Not as many people watched a 5-minute episode as would watch the 60 second. That doesn't mean it was a failure. That right. means that we had, you know, 800,000 people like watching these 60-second videos. 300,000 people were engaged enough to stick with it for 5 minutes and really watch, or whatever the number was. I don't remember sure. the final number. And so that's just a deeper level of engagement. It wasn't this or that. It was this and that. And now all of a sudden that brand, Over the Fire Cooking, has much more content, has some different content. And the content also brought Derek in front of the camera and gave him much more of a sort of celebrity status on his own channel. So it was positive in a bunch of different ways, even though as an instinctual baseline primal marketer, you might say, this got 3, this got 8, this is better. Not so much.
Yeah.
That's the practical side of it. I totally enjoy it. But, well, we probably have to let you go cut your grass, as I think you said you have to do today.
It's the only thing I've got to do today. I got all
it's
day.
Sunny.
I don't care.
But we always have a question of the day. But first, before we do that, tell everybody where they find you on social media. And if you want to start talking about when your next book comes out, which, by the way, mentions your Jagoff.
What not to do with your Jagoff.
No, if you want to go through all that, then we'll ask you the question of the day.
Sure. I'm easy to find online. I'm Jason Falls pretty much everywhere. There's a politician in North Carolina who does not like me. And I asked him to send me a yard sign one time, and he was like, no, I'm not going to do it. So give me the URL and I'll give you a yard sign. I'm like, that wrong. You're to 50 cents worth, maybe $500,000 value there. Not going to happen.
Yeah.
Not $500,000, but you know, it's good anyway. So jasonfalls.com is my, you know, sort of blog website. It's where I post my episodes of my podcast. You can also find the Jason Falls Show right now on all the different podcast services. The name is switching to Digging Deeper, Making Creativity Your Business Advantage. And so we're kind of widening the scope a little bit to more how creativity can impact your business. And so that will be the new name of the show. The first episode of that technically starts on Tuesday. I broadcast those live at 8:00 Eastern time on Facebook, LinkedIn, and YouTube. So just follow me on those channels. And you'll see that he's live notifications. And then the new book is due out in early 2021, January, I hope, from Entrepreneur Press, which is a pretty nice sized publisher. So I'm excited about that. And it's called Winfluence, Reframing Influence Marketing to Ignite Your Brand. And so that will be coming. If you just follow me on jasonfalls.com, you'll get updates there.
Nice.
So awesome. I'm so excited we finally got to talk to you. And it's a pleasure to meet you.
And sorry,
John let me talk to you, Jason. It was like, you know, just you and him for a hot minute.
Sorry you had to work for this too. I'm just sitting here holding a microphone.
This is great. Yeah, and for the people who are watching out there, you know, John was like, hey, we don't quite have the Switcher Studio thing set up yet, so we'll just do this straight. And I'm like, hell with that, we'll use mine. Let's just do it this way.
Yeah.
And John was like, okay.
Yeah.
All right. We can't let you go. Obviously, you are a member of the Ajaga podcast by knowing that we have a thread question of the day every time, right? Every podcast. So today, this is the Out of Toners. You know, I hate speaking like that, but the Out of Toner episode. So being out of town but having ties to Pittsburgh, what is the one person, place, or thing that perfectly identifies Pittsburgh?
Wow, that's a good... Golly. I mean, obviously my
Say
dad...
Say a question! Say that's a good question, because then I win.
That it is a good question.
Jeez!
I would say right now, Billy Gardell. That's
that's a good answer.
He, to me, sort of amplifies what Pittsburgh is.
Yeah.
I think he's absolutely hysterical, and I love the fact that he's been successful and kept that sort of, you know, Pittsburgh route and
no doubt
let the big city get to his head and all that kind of stuff. That's very Pittsburgh. I think he says a lot about what Pittsburgh means to me.
Jason Falls, thank you so much. I feel like since you did all the work now, I should come down and cut your grass, but it's going to take
But he'll never make it. So.
So you're welcome to. You know, if we went 20 more minutes, we could say, yeah, it's on the Jagoff podcast for about an hour.
He and I were pulling out the drive. Cops want me to talk, but my lips are locked. I got nothing to say.
Process that we go through for our guests, especially now that we're not quite quarantined, so we shouldn't say that because we are coming into the green phase. But you know, we've held people captive and not given them an option. We have to call you by phone and they say okay. So this week, when we realize that we're doing this like out of town kind of thing, who better than our friend Bonix, right?
Right.
But I will give you credit because you are the one who said, well, I'll text him, and I didn't have his number, so that sort of
we're tight.
We're tight. Yeah.
But not as tight. We're gonna tell you why we're not as tight as, as I thought we were.
I'm glad because you walked right
on my
into
end because I dropped the ball. But anyways, welcome to the Jagoff podcast for the first time, DJ Bonix.
Yeah, welcome.
Hey.
We've always seen you at David Allen, and we've certainly followed you through social media and all your amazingness with DJing and things like that, but we never had you on the podcast, so we're super excited. We appreciate you taking the time, especially because please tell everyone where you are calling in from.
I'm calling from South Minneapolis, on Portland Avenue here in a new apartment that I just moved into, which is only a few blocks from my old apartment. Where a lot of the things that you may have seen on national news went down.
Crazy.
And so I'm here in Minneapolis now. I've been here for the last 3 years, but it is nice to be on the podcast, guys. It's nice to know that, you know, people in Pittsburgh still think about me. So that's a nice thing.
Oh, my God. Are you kidding?
No.
You know Pittsburghers. Yeah. We more than think of you.
Right. Now, let's review in case somebody does live under a rock. Somewhere around 2003 to 2010, you were on. Were you one of the first DJs when it turned to KISS, 96.1 KISS?
You know, I was definitely in that, like, class to where we began to battle the heritage there, B94. So I definitely was, like... I wasn't in the first class of that because it went through a couple cycles, not even a lot of long cycles, but basically I was hired not too long after Mikey and Bob, were hired and Tall Kathy was an intern at the time.
Wow.
So it was definitely like the prequel to, you know, 96.1 KISS. And now obviously it is the heritage. So
it is, right? I mean, it's amazing. And then somewhere along the way, you progress into being Wiz Khalifa's DJ. Now,
that's right.
And we want to, how does that happen? Just,
yeah, I don't think I ever heard the story on how that literally happened.
Well, I mean, you know, and a lot of my answers will kind of be a little bit of lessons at the same time is that, you know, when you're a part of a music or something, like there's a culture being involved. So even whether it's bowling or cooking or what have you in Pittsburgh, there's a culture, right? I'm sure there's a podcast culture. There's a DJ culture. There's a cooking culture. And so what I like to say, just so it's not, this romantic story, I like to say that I was a part of the culture. And so when you're a part of the culture, people will put certain people on your radar. I was really great friends, and I still am really great friends with Eric Dan, who basically had produced a lot of Wiz and Mac. But, you know, let's take it back to years and years ago, about 2005-ish, maybe six. He had moved into a new studio in Lawrenceville on Butler Street. And I remember him specifically saying to me, there's this kid, Cam, who comes after school, and, you know, him and his friends have, you know, studio time, and, you know, the other kids aren't so great, but this Cam kid's pretty good. And so from then on, we've kind of like all, you know, there were more specific people that took care of him in the beginning, but I was always around, and I just offered my platform to when he was ready for it. And, you know, building that relationship. And that's why I go back to the culture part of it, is that you saw this kid who was coming up, and then you understood how special he was. And then every day that passed, I would more and more and more find ways to help him, and to a point to where I'm sure they recognized that I was. And when they needed me, they asked me to, I'll go back to I always was booking him. I booked him at Slippery Rock. I booked him at some colleges. I booked him at Pitt a couple times. And he was young, and he was coming up, and he was playing mixtapes, et cetera. And there was just a point where I was kind of fed up with what the music was and what was going on at 96.1 Kiss at the time. It wasn't serving me. Like, sometimes you just know when you don't, when the world tells you, where you do and don't belong.
And that's a great point.
It was crazy timing and divine timing to where they needed a DJ, because they said, hey, this fall, we're going on our first tour. Wiz wrote a song called Black and Yellow. That's going to be the single. He got signed to Atlantic Records. No one knows this yet, but we're planning his first tour bus tour. So when they came up to me with that, I was music director number one in afternoons on 96.1 Kiss. But I just wasn't feeling the vibe. The music wasn't vibing with me at the time. I know inside that I wanted and needed more, and that opportunity came, and I quit my job on top. People were like, Wiz who? Like, what are you doing this for? Some people's dreams would be a music director in an afternoon
right.
show in a top 25 market.
Yeah.
And, I just took the leap, and the rest is history.
That's crazy.
It is crazy, because I never did hear that story. And it's like you just followed your gut. It was like, this is what I like
right.
to do. I'm taking
right.
the chance.
Right.
You know?
Definitely a gut follow.
Yeah.
Definitely something that really rang heavy during that time was my sister, who said, and she said she didn't know anything about Wiz or anything like that. She just heard, knew what the passion I was talking with. And she was like, risk big, reward big. And I will always, listen to that advice, because it certainly is true.
Yeah. Quite frankly, in our Jagoff Media thing, we've seen that as well, right?
Question.
We took this jump to be entrepreneurs, and not necessarily like we invented something, but the fact is we have a podcast, we have a marketing company, and it is not a safe place to be, but it is the most comfortable one of us has ever been in our lives as far as.
Well, and it goes back to, and listen, if you're telling your, 18-year-old self this, it's a totally different story, because time tells, right? But if you're telling the 18-year-old, you want to tell them it's a mixture. It's a little bit, you have to figure out what's going to make you money, but you have to enjoy it. And then once you kind of dip your toe in and you get that experience, then you go, I need to like what I do. It's just right. how the progression of time. So I
well,
love hearing it from someone like you.
People will ask me about my career, and I always just did what felt right. I didn't always do what would get me the most money at the time.
Right.
I didn't always do what was the easiest thing to do for me. I did what felt right to where the journey I wanted to go to. And it was odd, because I just did what felt right. Like, I definitely had some mentors, mm-hmm. but you have to really, how can I put this? You really have to, it's like passion in action, man. I didn't care what I was making in 2007.
Mm-hmm.
If you wanted to really know, I had been making probably for the first 3 or 4 years of me working at Kiss, like when I first started, they gave me a salary of $16,000.
What?
Like, that's what we're talking. That was my salary at Kiss for my first 3 years working there. There's a whole other story, but we won't go there.
Okay.
But that was it. That was it. But if you were to look at that now, or if anybody look at that now, they would be like, man, this is a completely disrespectful and whatever.
Sure.
I'm a college graduate or whatever. But I didn't look at it like that. I was like, oh shit, this is my way in.
Right.
And that had to be it, because you can't get into the NBA and not go to the practices.
Right.
You can't get into the NBA and can't show up for, any of those things. And so that was really important in the journey, is understanding that I'm willing to put myself through these processes, not because it's like, well, if I do this, I get this. It's, I want to engulf myself in this culture, and this is what I have to do.
So how does that culture, that's an awesome point. I mean, seriously, you're years beyond your age, but, and what does that culture mean now? So now here we are in 2020, right? And so how did that dream, like you said, and that is a niche culture, right? Because some people might say, well, I don't even get what DJing is. Isn't it just a thing you do for the young folk, right?
It's
right.
One or of those, it's playing songs on the radio.
It's playing songs.
Way different than that.
So I think, two parts. We need to understand the science, right? Like help us. I mean, I think we understand a little bit, but help our listeners understand what is the science to mixing and what's the culture now?
I'm lucky enough to put my toe into, I would break it up into, you could break DJing up into like three or four different categories. For this sake, we'll do three. One is the radio guy who may not even be mixing and is just saying, you know, that they would consider Mikey and Bob DJs. Two, the guy that's in the club that you see in the club, right? Like, hey, I'm DJing the club, you're drinking, and I'm providing the soundtrack for it. And then there's the performance guy, the guy who's on stage with an artist, or maybe he's a producer and he's up there performing. And I've been able to tackle all three.
Right.
Which is the guy in the club, the guy in the radio with the voice and mixes on the air, and the guy that stands next to Wiz Khalifa and performs with him and all that. So I have this very great sort of range of what my craft does. But, you know, they like to say jack of all trades, master of nothing. So sometimes I like to think if I was just on the radio and just doing that, maybe I would be more celebrated in radio. If I was just concentrating of just being the club, which I did for a long time and people may didn't have celebrated, you know, I'll play the humble card, but then maybe I'd be a breakthrough in that. And then with Wiz, maybe I could be just focusing on how I perform on stage, but I haven't been willing to leave any of those other areas because I see how it all works together. So there's a guy that DJs in a club in Pittsburgh, but does the radio, but do record labels know him? Like if the record right. labels come to the city, are they say, yo, we got this new record by so-and-so, we got to give it to them? They're not. They don't know them. They don't have a relationship with that.
Right.
Okay. So that's what I have there with me. But me DJing the club with real skills and like my talent, people can look at me and say, yo, that's a real DJ, because there's people on the radio who just talk but don't really DJ. So now I'm in that world. And then on top of that, me standing next to someone like Wiz Khalifa and doing some of the great adventures that I've gotten into, it's like, oh, not only does he play the music in the club, he also can talk about it on the radio, and he can share his experience with standing next to Wiz Khalifa. So now I locked up a triple vibe right there of, dude, not only is he playing it, he stands next to it, and he delivers it on a platform that is not easy to do. Like, I would like to put it this way. You ready? There's maybe three radio stations in Pittsburgh that I could get back on if ever opportunity rose, right? Three. Star, Kiss, or Whammo. Currently, I'm back on 96.1 Kiss on Fridays, just so you guys know.
I knew that. I was just going to say that, but go ahead.
So then we'll just break those to that there's four day parts for each, right? So that's four times three stations, which means that there's 12 spots to get in those formats on radio. And how many positions are there on the Pittsburgh Steelers?
60.
There's probably like 40. 30 on the field or
yeah,
whatever.
Yeah, okay. Right.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Sure.
And so
yeah.
I know this sounds crazy and people are going to be like, oh, you're fucking crazy for saying this. But if you're talking about the odds, it could be harder for me
to get
into those 12 spots on the radio because you got to wait for them to open up
than it
is to maybe get on a football team. You feel what I'm saying?
No, exactly. Yeah, yeah. Especially in a market like Pittsburgh where it seems people stay here forever.
Right. Like you have to wait till someone gets fired
sure.
or they flip a format. Or you have to wait till someone fucks up until that spot opens up.
Yeah.
And so that's what makes that really unique is that that's why, you know, what you were asking about the culture of it is that I got to be a part and I am a part of three cultures, which are nightclub, performance, and radio. And, you know, I'm not saying that I'm stepping away from the nightclub, but I've been doing that for so long that now, especially in this time, hip hop being an everyday thing, you know, in the 90s,
yes.
It was different.
Mm-hmm.
It was like, oh, hip hop is scary.
Yeah.
Hip hop is a little bit more scary. It's just a little scary in the 2000s. Now it's an everyday part of life.
Yep.
you know, and people are TikToking or whatever, and they're playing. Man, I remember doing music for the Steelers, you know, being able to produce different things. And I just knowing the climate of the fans are very hard to like, you start putting hip hop in those games, people would complain. I remember kind of being, you know, in the 2000s. But now we're in a different place, man, where, and so now, as far as culture is concerned, it's about using my platform to try to not just be, yo, I'm a DJ, yo, yo, and I'm here, but like, yo, here's how I can impact my community. Here's how I can impact the culture of whatever I'm doing. More or less, if you were to write a, so here's how I look at culture. If you were to write a book, a culture book about podcasting in Pittsburgh, where does your podcast fit in that book? And that's how I look at how I move in my ways and how culture affects it.
And that's defining culture. That's, you're hitting it right on the head. That's exactly it. And it's an age thing too. I have to throw that in, right? I'm 44, so I can, you know, it's one of those things like I can say it because I am at that age. You bring up TikTok. You know, I think back to the days of my parents' music, you know, the baby boomer stage, right? And so in the '80s, you know, these records, like who knew vinyl was even going to happen? And they came about.
Right.
Now, fortunate for me, I came from a musical family, so I knew what they were before everybody else did. But there was this talk of like, well, what the hell is this coming about? Or like you said, you know, hip hop came and it was this, oh my gosh, this is what we're going to start listening to. For me, my kids can't wait to talk about music with me because I make myself understand what is right now. And it's in our faces. It's everywhere from social media to, you know, like you said, on the radio.
And I think that, DJ Bonix, I think that you've made this transition. If people go to YouTube and search your name and the national anthem at the Minnesota Twins game, that's where you see you've made the transition from, as you said,
it's
people where people are accepting of this type of talent,
craft.
Music craft is a correct word you use because you bridged that gap right there.
That wasn't easy though. I'll tell you a little quick story about that. Because I already know the climate of those situations. I've DJed at Penguins games. I've DJed at Steeler games. I've DJed at sporting events. Like, we'll be honest, like, DJing and hip hop is slowly making its way into there to where people are comfortable with it, right?
Right.
So here's where I know that I'm headed in the right direction because not everyone agrees with it. And that's what I realized. It's like, I heard this analogy before, you know, life is like a video game and you know, you're headed into the right direction when it gets harder, right? So here's my little quick story about that. I had the idea of that a year before it happened. And I was like, wouldn't it be crazy if I just chopped up national anthems and I just DJed it? Cool. Move forward a year, you know, where I tried to say, hey, go to the Twins because the Twins actually own my radio station, which doesn't mean that it makes it any easier. It's just I did have that ask. I had the ask. And they said, hey, well, we already booked all the national anthems for this year, maybe next year. So they reached out to me the next year, and I was able to – I showed it to them. They were like, this is cool. And the day that I did it, it was so new to people. Like, what is he doing? That you could tell that the half of the response just wasn't sure, which to me is perfect because, you know, the first person that ever like said, hey, I'm going to make this horn and I'm going to blow into it and it's going to make noise. I'm sure people were like, well, what?
Yeah.
So
right.
I did the national anthem and I remember looking over and this older white gentleman looked right at me, shook his head, took his hat, put his hat back on and looked away. While a bunch of other people ran up to me and said, yo, that was cool. But people just, I could just feel it that they just weren't sure. Like people weren't sure because it was just something that they never seen before. And they didn't understand it. And I walk over and I see this guy shake his head and all these people are coming up to me ready to congratulate me. And I just kind of break free from them and I run up to the guy and it was a really passionate moment where I said, excuse me, sir. I see you shaking your head. I just wanted to say that this is what young people are doing. And I, you know, if you don't respect it, that's fine, but this is what's happening. And he looked at me like he was shocked, like, oh my God, I can't believe this kid just came up to me. And he was just like, oh, I mean, it's just not my thing, man, is what he said. You know, it's just not like, what's not your thing? Innovation? Something new?
Right.
You know what I'm saying?
Yes.
And so you know, later on in the game, one of his friends came up to me and was like, his friend came up to me and was like, man, he really needed to hear that. Our friend is kind of an asshole. And, and so that's what it is. And then there's people who like came at me on Twitter about it. Like, this is, you support Trump if you do this, and all this other people trying to drag me through their narrative. But what I realized that day is, I did something that no one ever did before with DJing. And I think that, you know, I don't really celebrate that as much as I should, because it was so, controversial for people.
Right.
You know?
And it's so fascinating to me to watch it. Like, I'm just amazed.
It's a process.
By it.
That's the point that I'm saying.
And it's something you have to practice, just like catching a ball or hitting a ball or hitting a hockey puck. It's something you master.
There's a science to it. Yeah.
It's crazy.
And so,
you know, the main ingredient for DJing, I would say, if I were to say one word of DJing and what the most important word of DJing is timing. And you know, that goes into all different sort of situations. Are you putting in the song on time? Is it the perfect time to play that song? Is the time of this song gonna, you know, so that's what I, you know, DJing is all about timing. And so you really learn how to feel the moment out and play the right song at the right moment that might, you know, invoke emotion into someone.
Yeah. I love the fact that if someone started listening to this and said, I don't even know the name DJ Bonix, but as they heard your voice, they're going, oh shit, I remember him on the radio. That kind of thing. Because the voice is so clear. So let's take a second here, if you don't mind. You are in Minneapolis, and it is serendipitous that we, you know, when I called you, I go, how's Portland? You're like, hey, idiot, I've been out of Portland since for the last 3 years.
But I
just want people to know that we did not, you know, engage this conversation because of what is happening, but it is the elephant in the room. And Rachel and I have had, you know, it's no secret, we're two white people, and but we also have treated human beings like human beings our entire lives.
Well, and I think it's even important, I know where you're going, but I have to interject what he just said about the gentleman who asked him about the national anthem is exactly what you and I just said. I'm not afraid to have the conversation. I'm white, you're black, you're mixed, you're this. Why are we not talking about what everybody can do? Right. Yeah. So you sort of said the same thing. Like, why was this guy so misled by innovation? It had nothing to do with anything else. Right. Hence this situation. So,
And we know that, look, the last thing we want to do is two white people surround ourselves with, hey, these are all our black friends over the next 3 days, right? We know who our friends are. We know what we can.
There's
and
a comfort
we,
there, yeah.
And, and the fact is, this is a marathon, not a sprint. So, anyways,
1,000%.
Let's talk about your situation there in Minneapolis and just your personal situation. How
I'm
you can, how can you educate us as far as how can we all fix this? Yeah. And we know that man was murdered, right? We know that. We know that racism is bad. But what do we all do to make sure that it looks like we're not just knee-jerking and that we do something for the long haul?
I'm here in Minneapolis, one of the best places that I ever lived. I've lived in 4 or 5 different cities. I got here by accident from Portland. Portland was a very short stint. And dude, this community is amazing, man. I'm shocked. When I moved here, I was never really impressed with cities in the Midwest. Maybe Chicago, but when I got here, it was, the job more than the city. And then I learned to fall in love with the city. So let's fast forward to last week, where just right up the street, George Floyd was killed. You may have seen a bank burned down on CNN. That was my bank. You may have seen a post office burned down. That was my post office. And my neighborhood, the place that I would get gas or whatever, everything's boarded up around that now. And seeing that on fire, knowing that I went to that bank is crazy. Now, we all know that the killings of black people unjustly have been happening for years and years and years, and now it's come to a height, and this is where we are right now. And it's been, the thing that I know is that this community is so amazing and want to build each other up. The first night of all the real riots and looting, I went out the next day, and there were hundreds of people with trash bags and brooms trying to clean up the community. I'm talking like, if you came and showed up with a broom and trash bag, you probably were too late. Because there were so many people. Wow. Just the other day, I was volunteering, collecting donations at a drop-off point for a black-owned business for people in the community. And just seeing all the people come together is crazy. And being here in Minneapolis, which is really the catalyst to what's going on, not just around the country, but around the world, has been something special to see, because not only am I here as like a bystander, but I'm also here as a person that's on the radio and uses my voice to try to help share information, lift up. Today, I'm going to start my show here in a half hour, with, you know, not 8 minutes and 45 seconds of silence. And man, I have all the skills that I learned in Pittsburgh, and everything is happening like faster now because of the experience that I built, because it took me a long time to, like, you know, be a part of the culture in Pittsburgh. And now I know how to insert myself here because I'm coming in with a little bit more weight, with Wiz and the experience that I have. So being able to be a part of the change here, being a part of the community, helping clean up the community, and just being a voice of hope for people has been so inspiring for myself. But as far as, you know, racial tensions goes, and what can people do, is speak out against it. And I know that a lot of people want to first say, well, I don't believe that ruining our neighborhoods is the way. But then you're assuming that everyone who's protesting is ruining the neighborhoods.
Right.
So
okay.
What you really have to do is watch people's language. Because if they're going to speak first about, well, I don't think we should. No, no, no. You need to come first with the killing was wrong, and then go ahead. Let me hear what else you have to say. Because that's what we're talking about. You see what Drew Brees was, tone deaf about the situation. Yes, I believe he's entitled to his opinion, and he may not feel or what people are fighting for, but he has to see what's happening. And if you're not acknowledging that, and that's the thing, is that white people need to acknowledge that this is happening. And if you're scared and if you're not sure, there's simple ways that you could speak out. You know, a white friend reached out to me, says, what can I do? And I said, do whatever is comfortable, I guess, for you. But you need to speak out and let this know this is wrong, or let your children know it's wrong. Because I see a lot of, on Facebook, people that I do respect in Pittsburgh, business owners, whatever, saying things like, we need to take away the government assistance for any of the looters and rioters. Once again, you're assuming that people who are protesting are on government assistance. You see what I'm saying?
Yes.
Is that there's just this systematic use of language that doesn't allow for us to move forward. So here in Minneapolis, they've been starting to try to fire the police and basically maybe come up with a new sort of community-based process to hire people that will protect. The University of Minnesota canceled their contract with the police. So imagine all the football games.
Yeah.
First Avenue canceled their contract with the police. The Parks and Recreation, this is all happening this week, canceled their contract with the police. And dude, that's like where a lot of that money comes from. And so we are funding these police officers with our tax dollars, and it's just enough is enough.
Mm-hmm.
There's different ways to go about it. I understand the anger and I understand the extremity, but I also understand that destroying our neighborhoods isn't necessarily the way either.
Right.
But from what I can observe here in Minneapolis, it's a lot of the white, I don't know, Antifa or liberals or whatever. It's like they're destroying the neighborhood, not the people
sure.
of the neighborhood.
No question.
And then you throw in the white supremacist people that are riding around as well and shooting and so. There's a lot of things that you don't hear or see that the news is ignoring that is happening, to where agitators are really happening. People from out of town are coming in. I don't know if you guys know what Unicorn Riot is, which you definitely should check out. But Unicorn Riot is a guy on Twitter who goes into these riot situations and does these, you know, real balanced interviews. And most of these people that are like, oh, they're like, I ain't even from here, this is lit. So people are destroying our neighborhoods, they're not from here. So, you know, as far as your question of what can you do, guys, is like, you know, sharing this platform for someone like me to be able to express my feelings and listen to what they're saying. Listen to what people, obviously, especially black people, listen to their anger, feel that pain, show empathy, have conversations, forgiveness, compassion, and love. I know I've been trying to push this message of forgiveness, And because we need to forgive, forgiveness is a part of love. So whether it's forgiving yourself or forgiving others or asking for forgiveness, that there's going to have to be a lot of that, because, I'm not really down with the extremity, messages, but I understand why people feel that way. So I can only do what I can. And, you know, you guys are white and I'm Filipino. So, you know, I empathize, and I totally have been on the receiving end of racism 1000%. I mean, what if that cop pulled me over, Derek Chauvin, in this city of Minneapolis, and he didn't like the way I looked? Mm-hmm. He didn't like, you know, and so you have to put yourself in your shoes for that. So I know there's a lot of like suburb people, and not just suburb people, who are, you know, oblivious to what's going on and maybe scared, which is understandable, but there's a real fight going on, and it is about, we got to end racism.
Yeah.
Obviously there's people out there who think that they're better than others based on the color of their skin. And, that just is ridiculous.
And ending racism maybe comes in everybody ending fear by having conversations, really, and understanding where each other's side is. All right. That's really conversation. But what you don't know, we've held this, is that we always have a question of the day that brings all of our guests together. So now this is probably the toughest question you're going to face all day today.
Are you scared? Oh. You scared?
There we go.
It has nothing to do
here
with
we go.
David
Allen.
You
sound like Frizzy.
And again,
right now.
A shout out to David Allen for all.
Absolutely.
We always get to connect with you because of that.
Yeah. All right. So this is scary business, but when you think of Pittsburgh, since you are not living here, what person, place, or thing screams the black and yellow or Pittsburgh?
Wow.
Good question,
wow.
Right?
You know, I'll have to, you know, if this is not necessarily my final answer, if I were to think about it,
okay.
But I'll be honest.
Okay.
Two people shot into my head right away was Mr. Rogers.
Nice.
Okay.
And then when you said black and yellow, of course I thought about
she led you down a path.
I did.
She led you down a path.
But Mr. Rogers, for certain. Why?
For
because
sure.
I'll be completely honest with you, and this is not an exaggeration. When I was younger, and I actually am from Philadelphia originally, grew up in Philadelphia.
Yep.
And I loved Mr. Rogers. So I love Mr. Rogers. Like, I can't tell you enough. I love Mr. Rogers.
That's awesome. That's a
seeing
culture.
The documentary. I haven't seen the movie yet, but knowing, you know, watching him go through that play neighborhood when I was 6 or 7, and then years later actually living in that neighborhood. And I remember my sister used to work at the PAA where he used to work out right there in Oakland, and seeing, you know, just what he meant to the city, and then finding more about him in the documentary, and then I guess the movie, which I haven't seen yet. So it would be Mr. Rogers, man, because I think that guy really, I'll be honest, Western Pennsylvania can be a scary place sometimes, man. You could see a guy with a huge Confederate flag just drive downtown. Like, it's real out there. Western Pennsylvania definitely is a little bit different climate. So knowing that someone like Mr. Rogers is from that city, and knowing that the impact that he made, and then really before when I was watching it when I was little, hey, there's a black cop in a pool with a white cop, and they were sharing that. But knowing the why behind it years later and how it's important, come on, like, that's just light years before its time, or maybe right on time, because that's what we need right now are more Mr. Rogers in this world.
Yeah. That's awesome.
So it's Mr. Rogers.
Listen, you impress me more than you know, because I've only had the pleasure of literally seeing you and interacting with you at the David Allen events, which are of course amazing, but they're limited and they're fun and quirky. And having an extended conversation with you, your intelligence and your insight just truly are amazing. So kudos to you, and thank you for being a part of the fabric of this new age. I appreciate it.
Nah, kudos to you guys too, because you guys have been doing it for a while. We understand the risk, you know, risk big,
sure.
Reward big, but you can't be halfway into it for it to succeed. So salute to you for being, you know, one of the people that I know in Pittsburgh that are doing things like this that are innovative. And hey, I'm just a few years behind both of you. And so being able to do these things that are innovative, and you guys are, you know, one of the forefronts in doing that, and I respect that. So I appreciate you reaching out, and I appreciate what you do for what you're doing for podcast culture and Pittsburgh culture, and celebrating it and being a part of it and highlighting it, because that's what we need, are more people to keep shining the light on this wonderful city of Pittsburgh.
You're awesome.
No doubt about it. Now, do you have a signature sign off for your show? So let's just end this segment with your signature sign off.
Oh, so normally, which I haven't done in a while, but keys, wallet, cell phone.
Rach, this is the end of the podcast, and this is where I get the score point, because you always find the musical guests.
I do.
And this one I found through our friend Kirsty Manna and Bill Warner down in Nashville. And we have a Pittsburgher who went to Nashville 9 years ago, packed up their stuff, went to Nashville, and now has a brand new single out that is crushing.
Yeah, and not to mention the fact that, as you said, we listened to her. Her voice is amazing. I'm glad that one of our own has gone that way and has done so well, and I'm more glad that we get to talk to her. So welcome, Elena.
Hi, thank you so much for having me.
Are you kidding? We're so excited. I mean, when John said we were going to get to talk to you, you know, we were like, this is great, not only for the fact that, obviously, we're about all things Pittsburgh, but I love that you are what Kirsty says, a creative girl, and you are inspired by women. So before we get into your background and things like that, tell us a little bit about what you talked with Kirsty about, because to us, Kirsty is just such, you know, a positive image and a positive light, especially for women. We're trying to get her Songwriter Girl Camp here in Pittsburgh to kind of have more of that Pittsburgh influence. But talk to us a little bit about what you two discussed and what it's like having the role of a woman, especially in Nashville today.
Oh yeah, Kirsty and her husband Bill they're so wonderful. I met them, like, when I first moved to Nashville, I was doing a workshop through a mutual friend, and she heard me play a song that I wrote by myself, and she was, I guess just, we had the instant connection. So, we've been friends ever since, and she has really encouraged me and believed in me this whole entire time. We've written songs together, and we talk about, you know, my worth and how I need to, you know, just like, you know, be confident and be secure in the artist that I am. And she's just been a really, really wonderful encourager for me.
You talk about people lighting up a room. That's Kirsty. And then Bill just sits back there. And he's the solid, rock, like, right there behind Kirsty. It's so funny.
That is so true. I mean, she's very fiery. She's, a short Italian woman. And you know, when she enters the room and her energy just, you know, permeates through the whole room.
Exactly.
So.
Exactly. Let's not go without giving your credentials. You are not just a girl who went to Nashville 9 years ago. You have a fair amount of country music award credentials, right? Let's go through some of those.
Oh, gosh.
Come on. Let's embarrass. Is your face turning red?
A little bit. Yeah. I mean, I guess I've won, you know, like, a bunch of TSAI awards. Like, TSAI stands for Tennessee Songwriters Association International, and that's an organization here in Nashville. And I've been blessed to win Female Songwriter of the Year for 3 years in a row, Co-Writer of the Year, Song of the Year, Song Cut of the Year.
Yeah.
And it's been great. You know, I just really appreciate the recognition from my peers, you know.
Let's go to what it's like when you go down there, and you're a songwriter. You think you're a songwriter when you go down there. Then you hook up with someone like a Kirsty or someone like at her level. What does that do to your brain? What does that do to your work ethic?
Or even the fact that you're leaving, you know, a small town like Butler in Pittsburgh, right? And thinking, wow, this is big time. Because while we're fortunate here in Pittsburgh to have somewhat of a music scene, it's certainly no Nashville, right?
Right. Yeah. No, I was looking before I moved here. I was looking for something to do with songwriting. You know, I was searching for some sort of group or something, and I really couldn't find much, honestly. I Googled, you know, songwriters in Pittsburgh or something. And what came up was, a Nashville Songwriters Association International, that's NSAI, a regional group in Allison Park that was meeting once a month on a Sunday night. And so I started going there and I met some people that were mutually interested in songwriting and stuff. But, yeah, I mean, when you move to Nashville, it's like, wow, like there's so many people like me that want to do this like me. And it felt like I had a family, you know, and I do have a family down here. The songwriter community is an amazing family and camaraderie. But I mean, when I stepped in the room with Kirstie for the first time to write a song, I was so scared. And she's just so, God, I've written with a bunch of people down here and I'll tell you, she's probably one of the strongest writers I've ever written with. She's incredible. Truly, seriously. And it's like, I get kind of nervous, you know,
sure.
I still get nervous, like.
Sure. Well, you know? And not only that, I mean, I'm sure for you from, again, I hate to use the female card, but let's do it, right? You know,
right.
Going to such a male-dominated genre of music, especially there, we love the fact that there's people like you and the Hobbs sisters and people like that who are going there and making names for themselves, because it isn't, you know, I'm a huge country music fan, admittedly. But what I love is explaining to people today who say, I never liked country music. Well, country music isn't your old, you know, Willie Nelson and Randy Travis, even though they're great pioneers. That's what mm-hmm. people identify. It's more these folky storytellers like yourself that really send positive messages. And I love seeing that, especially from our hometown. Are you noticing that with the new genre of people coming into Nashville, that that's sort of their jam versus that old school kind of country twangy stuff?
Yes. And I'm not going to lie to you. I really didn't listen to a whole lot of country music when I was like under the age of 10. I mean,
sure.
I liked Randy Travis. I liked Forever and Ever, Amen. Mm-hmm. But a lot of that stuff from the 90s, like, I actually didn't really dig. I didn't really get into country music until, like, Shania Twain and the Dixie Chicks. They made it sound pop.
Yep.
And I don't know. I mean, I think, obviously, you know, the female thing is an issue. It's
yes.
definitely been an issue the past few years. I mean, I've gone into many meetings. I've been in a label having a meeting, and they're like, well, you're really good, and you've got it all. But there's no females on radio right now. And I'm like, okay, let's change that. You
yes.
know, like, how can I, what can I do to, you know, how can we help this? You know, like, what can I do? You know, but I think now I'm really, really excited because, you know, there's girls coming out like Ingrid Andress and like Gabby Barrett from Pittsburgh.
Yeah,
she
there
just
you
had
go.
Her first number one.
Yep.
And I think that, you know, I think potentially it might be turning around here really soon. And I'm very excited.
I couldn't agree more. And I think the fact that people, and sometimes I think age plays a part too, right? It's more that
yeah.
it's what you know. It's what has been. And so now that people like yourself are breaking that barrier, it is cool to see that this new generation is saying, hey, this is a new name for country. And I will admit, Zac Brown Band is my all-time favorite band. I mean, from every, and get it, they're all male, but I love
yeah.
what they stand for. I love that, you know, there's a rock root to it. And same with you. I think the messaging, and I love that you bring up Gabby because we've interviewed her as well. And same, she has great messaging and she has something to say. And I think that even if you look to someone like a Taylor Swift who kind of, sure, she crossed, but let's face
yeah.
it, she started there. And I think she helped pave that road. Shania Twain, you know, people like that. If we could get more of that kind of talent, I just think it's just in the right direction, like you said.
Absolutely.
Well, one thing we didn't talk about is your life in Butler.
I went to Butler High School and I was a choir nerd.
Okay.
I did choir a lot. I begged and begged and begged for voice lessons, but I did not get them. I didn't really have the money to do it, but I tried my best to pay attention in choir. The high school teacher there, Brian Housel, he's wonderful. He does so much for the music community up there, and he helps a lot of people. He's helped me. And I competed in choir festivals. I was competing with kids that were like singing classical music.
Oh, wow.
So I really didn't know what I was doing, but you know, I was just trying to sing my best. And I had, you know, opportunities. I went to honors choir, district choir, regional choir, and that was really fun. And I went downtown. I tried to find a spot, you know, in Butler to play. And I went very often, almost every week, every Thursday night, I went to the Brick House.
Okay.
And I played open mic there, and I met somebody. His name's Bill Lafferty, and he ran the open mic there. And right now I think he works at Rena Center. He probably has no idea I'm, like, saying his name. But, yeah, we would just, like, jam down there and hang out. We would, like, record stuff and everything. And then I got into the regional meeting, and then I was like, hey, I'm going to move to Nashville now. So, yeah, so I tried to do what I could. You know, I tried to find what I could there. And I think that there's more, like, in Pittsburgh and stuff, but I would love to see Butler have more opportunities as well.
Sure.
For sure.
And people like you are making that happen.
So when Rachel and I come to Nashville, where are you taking us? Where Pittsburgh is coming to Nashville, where are the top two places you're taking us?
Oh, the top two places. Oh, my gosh. Probably, I mean, for me, I would love for you to see the listening room.
Yes. Okay.
It's awesome. It's the Bluebird Cafe is harder to get into, but I love the listening room. It's closer to downtown. They've got great food. They have the best upcoming singer-songwriters. I mean, the best. And it's just a really wonderful experience. So I would say that. And then, oh my gosh, I guess I would take you to the boot store where I work.
There you go.
You can get the boots and stuff. Maybe pick up some merch.
I love it. I love it. Oh, yeah. Well, listen, and talk to this real quickly before we wrap up is talk about, we're listening today during each interview, in between each interview, we're listening to your song. It is such a robust song. Like when you think like some girl from Butler created a song in Nashville, you do not think like this is a trailer truck hitting you in the face as soon as that music starts. So,
yeah, I've always wanted to write a song like this. Always. I just am so fascinated by the true crime documentaries, you know, Making a Murderer, The Staircase, Forensic Files, that kind of stuff. I find it fascinating. And, you know, with, you know, when quarantine happened, all this like Tiger King stuff came out. And I wrote this song with my boyfriend, Adam Kowal, who's also from Butler, and our friend Scott Barrier. And it's just a fun fictional song kind of based off Two Black Cadillacs, Gunpowder and Lead, The Night That the Lights Went Out of Georgia, based on those kind of songs too. So we had a lot of fun writing this one.
That's awesome. Well, listen, we love talking and connecting to folks who are former Pittsburghers. We love to see that they're doing what they love and certainly making a name for our town as well. But before we let you go, we need to know where everybody can follow you. And then we have the coveted question of the day that everybody gets.
Okay, sure. You can find me online, alanasmusic.com. You spell it A-L-A-Y-N-A-S music.com. Mm-hmm. I'm on Facebook, Twitter. I post videos weekly on YouTube. Instagram is Elena924 and a whole bunch of stuff.
Cool.
I'm all out
right
there.
We will put that in the show notes. That's perfect. And then here's the big question. We're calling this episode, Elena, the out of towners. You know how Pittsburghers talk, out of town, right? Instead of just saying out of town. So everybody was once from Pittsburgh and obviously has done something else. So the question is, what is being out of town, but obviously having those Pittsburgh ties, what is the one person, place, or thing that perfectly would identify Pittsburgh? If you were explaining to someone from Nashville, oh, I miss home because this is what Pittsburgh is, what would that thing be?
I love Permanis.
All right. That's a good one.
For sure.
That's
I do
a good
miss
one.
Permanis. Man, I miss Sheets. I mean, that's not like,
is that right?
I miss Sheets.
That is
really
so funny.
Do.
That is so funny. Listen,
Listen, our favorite reporter, Bobby Cherry, is going to love you right
yeah,
now.
Yeah, he really
is.
Such
a, he's a Sheets fanatic. That's yeah. so funny.
Oh, my God. I'm obsessed. It's so cool.
My kids are like
that. We
don't
have that here. We don't have that down here in Nashville. We don't. The what screens.
What do you get at Sheets?
Oh, my God. I love. Their salads are really good.
They are. Their wraps are good. Their MTOs are good. I know.
Everything.
Yeah.
And their ice cream. And, yeah. And I mean, I miss the Pittsburgh Penguins hockey team.
Okay.
I was a big fan.
Yeah.
You know?
Okay.
Yeah.
I miss them.
Same. We do too, actually.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. With everything. Yeah.
Elena, we can't thank you enough for taking the time this weekend, for letting us chase you down, and thanks again to Christy and Bill for the introduction.
Thank you so much. They're waiting for me to slip up, but I'm smart enough to sit
back and just hang on. Listen, I'm all about being on site, as you know. Like, I love events. But this is amazing. We're getting such good quality content. This is like our private conversation that everybody's listening to. But I mean, it doesn't get any better than these last months of podcasts. Not that we wanted COVID-19 to happen, but this is our silver lining.
And, you know, thanks to Jason Falls, and follow him because amazing. He's such, especially if you have a small business. And Elena?
Doesn't get any better. I love whenever Pittsburgh crooners, you know, spread their wings, go somewhere else. And now Nashville, they can't claim her. We can claim her, but at least we know this is where she came from.
And thanks again to Kirstie from the Kirstie Cast, which is a brand new podcast, for turning us on to her. And of course, DJ Bonix, Minneapolis.
I feel so educated. Mm. Don't you?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, just a better understanding of the art. Like we said, it's a craft, right? To do what he's doing. And then he obviously gives us some insight on what it's like living in Minneapolis. Kudos to him, and thanks for helping start the conversation.
Of course, thanks to Rorick Honda. Rorick Honda witnessed record-breaking sales in May, and now that most counties are green, there is no reason for June not to follow suit.
Plus, Hondas at Rorick range from small and compact to roomy and equipped, plus everything in between, and in all colors, makes, and models. Contact one of our reputable sales consultants, and as always, visit Rorick.com for all of your vehicle needs.
Shopping at the all-night mini mart, dropping little Debbie's in my cart. When the sheriff showed up with a pair of handcuffs and took me away, brought me into question about how my ex went missing. His mom's worried that he's hurt, he hasn't been to work in the last 7 days. Neighbors said the last time they saw him alive, he and I were pulling out the drive. Cops want me to talk, but my lips are locked. I got nothing to say. So I paid up. Let the whole town talk. Let the rumors run. Paid up. They're waiting for me to slam up, but I'm smart enough to sit back and just pay dumb. About his abuse, I covered up bruises and the truth. We were the perfect couple, no signs of trouble till the day he made me snap. I broke it off, but he kept coming round. I gave him one more chance and I took him out. Out by the lake with my 38, he fell right into my trap. 'Cause I paid up. Ooh. Could plead insanity, but for now I'ma keep my mouth.